You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 9th of June 2022 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming live today at RadioAlbion.com because we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from RussJournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. How are you doing?
Isn't it great to live in interesting times where every day there's some new crisis or disaster? I tell you, now I'm starting to understand that Chinese proverb or that Chinese condemnation, may you live in interesting times.
We certainly do live in interesting times. We don't know what is going to turn up next. We've been talking about the fuel crisis, and now we have the fertilizer crisis. Everybody relies upon food, and food relies upon fertilizer. So we'll start with looking at Russia's importance to the farming community. Russia is one of the world's leading exporters of fertilizers. According to the Fertilizer Institute in the United States, in terms of the global export market, Russia accounts for 23% of ammonia, 14% of urea, and 21% of potash, as well as 10% of processed phosphate exports. So that pretty much means that Russia is responsible for a quarter of the fertilizer trade in the world. So if you're going to put sanctions on that, it means farmers are not going to be able to fertilize their fields. It means that they're going to lose their crops. And in the poorer countries, it means there's going to be starvation. I mean, what do you know about the fertilizer trade in Russia, Matt, first off?
Well, for one thing, remember, GMOs are illegal. So whatever they're exporting is probably a very high quality. Now, I know Anthony Blinken and a few others, the regime denies that sanctions have affected a fertilizer. I mean, technically, legally speaking, sanctions can't affect food or anything connected to food. That's always supposed to be exempt. There's they claim, and I'm not, you know, they're probably correct, that fertilizers are largely exempt from sanctions, meaning either that companies are worried about doing business with them, certain supply chains have been disrupted in one form or another. Or it's simply a lie. And we'll talk here in a little bit of this huge list of fertilizer and food plants in the U.S. and elsewhere that have gone up in flames since the 1st of January. So there's a certain artificiality to all of this. But this is, you know, people don't know, including people in Washington have no idea of the significance of Russia in this respect. And it's in high demand everywhere, which means local fertilizer processors are either destroyed or have went out of business years ago. So this is just getting started.
Well, the World Bank's fertilizer price index rose nearly 10% in the first quarter of 2022 to an all-time high in nominal terms, and the increase follows last year's 80% surge. According to the projections, the prices will rise by almost 70% this year before falling, presumably 12 months hence. But of course, we've got the harvest to come before then. You've got the sowing that takes place in the spring now. Then you've got the harvest, which is going to take place in 4 to 6 months' time. And it's going to be 25% less at least because of this. So they're saying last year there was an 80% surge that would have been due to COVID. And then they're saying it's going to rise by another 70% this year. Well, if you're living in a very poor part of the world, how on earth are you going to afford to pay these prices? Do you know anything about the effect this is having on the third world? Is it affecting it yet, Matt?
Yeah, this is what happens in the third world and elsewhere. When you destroy, you actively target traditional farming practices, and this is even more relevant in the third world, and replace them with the mechanistic systems from the EU or the US. Because then fertilizer, imported fertilizer, wouldn't be a problem. That wasn't that long ago that farmers were totally self-sufficient in this respect. But if they're going to keep up with the demands and do battle with much larger concerns, they have to use the more mass-produced fertilizers. And we're going to see here in a minute where some of the bans on fertilizers actually existed, even though technically they're not supposed to be doing that. And also that supply chains have been affected too. All of this because of the economic threat that Russia poses to liberal capitalism. And I don't want anyone to underestimate the role that ideology plays here. That here you have an illiberal society that is outperforming liberal ones by every measure. And what an embarrassment that is, since liberalism is the entire justification for them being in power in the first place. This bubble that they live in. And finally, I think the farmers that are now dependent, not always, but recently dependent on these fertilizers, they're barely functional to begin with. So the only thing that's going to be left, of course, is the massive mega farms. And part of the, not the whole thing, but part of the whole fertilizer issue is to put these smaller actors out of business.
Well, I know in Sri Lanka, they returned the farming economy to organic farming, and it was a complete failure. I think they had a third less crops or 50% less crops, and it caused all sorts of problems for the country. They tried to do without fertilizer. So if you're used to using fertilizer, then this could cause serious problems. In April, the European Union adopted another package of sanctions against Moscow that included a ban on the import of fertilizers. Plus, vessels registered under the Russian flag were banned from EU ports. Derogations are granted for agricultural and food products, humanitarian aid and energy, the bloc said. Back in March, the EU sanctioned another important fertilizer exporter for its role in the Ukraine conflict, Belarus. Potash, one of the major sectors for the country's trade, was already under sanctions since 2021 when the EU decided to punish Belarus for alleged human rights abuses and artificially creating a migrant crisis, allegations that Minsk has denied. Adding to the delivery disruption since the beginning of the conflict in Ukraine, several major shipping companies, including the world's biggest container ship operators AP Moller Maersk AS and Mediterranean Shipping Co., suspended services to Russian ports. In response, the Russian Ministry of Industry and Trade advised fertilizer manufacturers to halt exports, citing transport sabotage. All this has seriously affected the price of fertilizers. Dr. Brian Baker, former president of the International Federation of Organic Agricultural Movements, North America, explained the market mechanism as a smaller number of suppliers in the industry gave them more market power to set prices. Fewer manufacturing facilities located more remotely from the fields where fertilizer was applied made the fertilizer market more vulnerable to supply chain disruptions. The COVID-19 pandemic had already caused major disruptions to the supply chain before the conflict between Russia and Ukraine. And of course, I think here we see where the West will blame Russia for this. They'll say, well, Russia has halted sending their fertilizer out, but you can't blame them for doing that if the ships, shipping container operators are hijacking the fertilizer and saying, we're not going to operate with you. I'm sure that's what they're worried about, is that it will just get taken. I mean, the West just seems to be acting like pirates at the moment, taking anything that belongs to Russia and claiming that they can just do this because Russia has gone into Ukraine. What do you make of what's being said here, Matt?
Well, the minute they use the word sabotage, they're, as always, projecting. I verified here this list of fires and explosions at both American, and this is strictly in the U.S., American food processors as well as fertilizer manufacturing. It's pretty much every other day. February 15th, Bonanza Meat went up in El Paso. February 22nd, Shearer's Foods went up. That same day, the Deli Star Meat Plant in Fayetteville went up. March 17th, Nestle food plant extensive, almost destroyed. Walmart Food Distribution Center catches fire. And March 19th, March 24th, McCrum Potato Plant in Belfast, Maine. March 29th, Maricopa Food Pantry burns down 50,000 pounds worth of food. A whole bunch of this is going every day almost. An explosion at a food processing plant or a fertilizer manufacturer. And April 19th, April 21st, April 30th. Every time it's an explosion at these, there's going to be none left. Because by now, most of the major food distribution centers have been destroyed in the U.S. And that, of course, includes manufacturers of – and some of these are major. Nestle is involved. Tyson, Cargill are being – so they talk about sabotage. They're not kidding. This food issue is artificial. One or two – Nebraska and Kansas can feed the entire world if all of their farmland were being used. It was just a few years ago we're being told that farmers shouldn't plant because they could drive the price down to zero. Now there's shortages. And this is what happens when you destroy the family farm and even the medium-sized farm. This is completely artificial. Most of the food distribution centers in America have gone up in flames since January and February. And that includes a whole bunch of fertilizer plants. Now, Russia is a major exporter of wheat, but the U.S. has always been number one in that respect. It doesn't take a whole lot of farmers to produce enough food. There's always this huge glut of food in the market where profits are almost zero. Now, of course, major firms can weather this. You know, Cargill and other, they have insurance companies paying for this. But at least in the short term, you're talking about artificially created food shortages. Russia or even Ukraine is not responsible for this kind of thing. Even sanctions aren't responsible for this kind of thing. You have a couple of counties that could feed the entire United States. But of course, the entire infrastructure for that has been destroyed over the last 50 years. Now, the direct terrorist attack against food processors, almost every other day in the U.S. from January, even actually 2021 too, I have this huge list in front of me. Obviously, it's not a coincidence. No one's reporting on it, of course. So this entire thing sabotages at the root of all of this. And I'm telling you, any attempt of Russian export is going to be met with the same thing. More acts of war from the West. Now, I don't know of any theories as to who personally is doing this, but clearly the regime is far more powerful than any government or even collection of corporations. But the point is, and the point we're with all of this, is that the mega corporations can survive this. It's small and medium sized that were dying anyway that now are going to be completely destroyed. So you're going to have a pure BlackRock monopoly over food production, fertilizer production, which is the purpose of all of this. But you talk about, you know, oil is based on gouging and food is based on the destruction of supplies to the point where there are very few functional food processors in the U.S. right now.
Do you know what the reasons being given are for why there have been all these fires? I mean, they can't just be unexplained fires. Surely they must have found the arsonists or they must have some kind of explanation for them. Have you come across any repetition in the explanations or any suspicious explanations for them?
Yeah, I took a whole bunch of these at random and looked them up, and I found the newspaper articles. For the most part, they're still under investigation. They're not that long ago. But then you get your typical list, you know, electricity. I don't remember seeing the word sabotage, but arson does come up in a few of them. They're very tight-lipped. No one's really saying anything from the legal side. But because no one really thinks systematically, no one's putting all of this together. I got this from a third party, and I think people are aware of this list, and it grows almost every day. So you look up, you know, maybe 10 of them, and you see, okay, these are all genuine, and they're really pretty tight-lipped on, you know, journalists don't really give information. They justify the regime's power. So as of right now, so many of these, because they're so recent, I didn't look up the ones from last year, but your typical lists of possibilities for fires. You're going to start destroying these things. You're not going to hire some kids to do this. You're going to hire a professional, people with experience, whether it be intelligence or whatever. It's going to be very difficult for them to pin it on anybody. And even if they did, the media is not going to report it.
So the end result of it all is going to be even bigger corporations controlling farming and pushing out the small farmer. Well, the director of the Hungarian Research Institute of Organic Agriculture, Dr. Dora Drexler, also notes that the conflict pushed mineral fertilizer prices higher than ever. 2 years ago, when the pandemic started, everybody suddenly realized that sustainability of local food systems is very important because it is also interconnected with our health. Now, the new crisis once again underlines the importance of local food sovereignty and the risks of depending upon global value chains, Dr. Drexler said. The conflict itself revealed that the way the export of fertilizers and export of grain works between the continents is not sustainable. Dr. Baker says that right now farmers are scrambling and making adjustments to deal with the situation. Farmers that rely on short-term strategies for fertility management using soluble synthetic sources are in a worse position than those that use relatively insoluble organic sources and biological processes. Harvest can be expected to decrease, but not across the board, and producers are working hard to cut their losses. Heavy feeding crops, such as maize and potatoes, can be expected to have the greatest yield losses. Another expert, Professor Alexander Jikic from the International Business College Mitrovica in Serbia, says the problem has only just started. It's already being felt in the market that prices of some basic products are increasing, but this is just the beginning, because Ukraine and Russia are very big producers of not only food, but also fertilizers and fuel. So price of fertilizers will obviously increase rapidly, as well as the price of diesel, which is needed for agriculture. So these two inputs will affect the market product very much in the whole of Europe. Maybe some countries less, some more. Serbia is traditionally an agricultural country, so this can affect us as well. Yeah, I was forgetting about that too. The price of diesel, that's now gone up over £1 for a litre over here in Britain. But this this Dr. Baker here is saying that people that are using strategies, using organic sources and biological processes, they're going to be better off. But what happened in Sri Lanka is that they lost half their harvest and it ruined the farming economy. Trying to use biological processes, I think, you know, maybe we've gone too far to actually be able to do that in a lot of parts of the world, because we've just drained the soil completely from the nutrients that it needs, and you just have to put this fertilizer in there. So what are they going to do? I mean, we've basically, you know, we've taken all those nutrients out of the soil. It used to be an apple a day kept the doctor away, and now you have to eat 5, 7, 10 pieces of fruit a day. And the reason for that is the nutrients are just not there anymore, because we've over-farmed everything. I mean, what do you make of what these experts have to say here, Matt?
Well, most of, at least in the Western world, and especially the U.S. and Canada, most farmland is fallow. It hasn't been used in a very long time. And in fact, as we all know, farmers were paid small subsidies for, you know, to keep it fallow. And the purpose is overproduction. A lot of the – and you're right, of course, about nutrient losses. A lot of this is quite deliberate. Especially in the fruit arena, you know, fruit growers are up against candy for snacks, you know, and of course, candy is nothing but sugar. So in order to compete, fruit growers have artificially injected all kinds of glucose, you know, to sweeten it up. I'm telling you, a strawberry today does not taste like a strawberry 100 years ago. These are loaded with sugar. You think fruit is an alternative to candy. You're wrong. They have about the same amount of sugar in it. And of course, it's all artificial. But you're right about the Sri Lankan case. It has nothing to do with organic farming. But when you destroy the infrastructure for it and you destroy the expertise, traditional farming method, you can't just resurrect them overnight. It was a very naive thing to do, and I'm sure the state had a lot of negative influences on that. And international, you know, so much of that place has been colonized by Western firms as well as Indian and Japanese firms. So it was done on a limited scale. But again, this guy talking about sustainability, well, this whole thing is artificial. It's been artificial for years now. So what do I mean sustainability? They're the same people who are complaining about sustainability are the ones who created this situation in the first place. And so much of this is simply going to go over the heads of even fairly educated people, because, again, they don't think systematically. You know, it was like the whole Donald Trump thing of re-industrializing the U.S., well, that's a great idea, except that none of the infrastructure for industry exists anymore. Literal infrastructure in terms of bridges and roads, trucking, raw materials, the education for people to work in that environment. That would take decades to resurrect a society that's capable of being reindustrialized. And that goes for organic farming too. You can't destroy over the last 50 years everything having to do with that kind of farming, empowering these massive corporations. And on the other hand, say, okay, overnight we're gonna go back to the old ways. So this is a matter of artificially induced dependency. And as these guys also hinted at, that these producers are going to be cutting corners now. God knows what they're going to be selling as fertilizer when you have these shortages domestically and internationally, what they're going to start using, how they're going to be cutting corners with the law, and God knows what is going to be growing. But you're also right about the soil. In certain places, of course, the soil as a matter of course has been monocrops destroy the soils. But at least as far as the U.S. is concerned, most soil is fallow. and hasn't been grown on in a very long time. But the monocultures, especially this nonsense soy producers, all this artificiality is killing everything and touches. That aspect is not sustainable, but that was also an explicit regime policy for 50 years now.
Global interconnectedness, isn't it? They wanted globalism. They wanted everybody to be all interconnected. But of course, once part of the supply chain fails, then that causes all the rest of it to fail. A close ally of Moscow, Belgrade, decided to not take part in the sanctions and came under extreme pressure from the EU as a result, Serbian President Aleksandar Vučić revealed. Professor Djikic himself is against imposing sanctions on Russia. People want to do their job, they want to produce as they get used to, and they want a market. They want to export to Russia as well. So that's one side of the story. But the other side is that the Western world is pressing our government to join their politics. Serbia is the last country in the world to place sanctions on anybody, not only on Russia, because we have suffered during the 1990s. We had suffered a lot. We know exactly how common people suffer from sanctions. So I think the parties who are imposing such a decision on our government are not honest, because these are the same parties who imposed sanctions on us in the 90s. So what's he referring to there, Matt, about the similarities between Serbia and Russia?
Well, when Milosevic, when Ukraine, when Yugoslavia still existed, there was this drive from the capitalists of the Western Europe to destroy it, breaking it up into its component parts, nullifying the whole point of Yugoslavia in the first place, which was to create a large state that could stand up to the great powers. Otherwise, they're too small. The U.S., in a cowardly way, bombed the Serbs largely for mythological reasons that didn't exist. And of course, sanctions were placed on from Milosevic onward to strangle the economy and to starve people. That's what, you know, that's what U.S. does when it simply doesn't have the military might to do much about it. And of course, the civilian infrastructure was targeted. The military, so they, you know, was completely irrelevant. Everything, of course, is a story. Now, why Serbia is part of the European order is a big mystery. So on the one hand, they talk about not imposing sanctions. On the other hand, they're still part of that European Union system. And so, you know, it's a blatant same thing for Bulgaria. So it's a blatant contradiction. These governments are imposed on these countries. Parties are controlled by the U.S. It has nothing to do with any local interest. Serbs are far more nationalist even than Ukrainians are. But they simply take these party leaders and throw them in prison. So many of these guys are in jail right now, usually based on make-believe charges. Same thing goes for Greece. So all of this is imposed by Western capitalists on these countries to secure the market and the mineral resources underneath the Serbian and Yugoslav soil. So he's talking about the same group of people. He's talking about the same ideology that tried to destroy Serbia a couple decades ago and is now the exact same people, and for the same reason trying to destroy Russia. To this day, there is not a single coherent explanation as to why any of this is happening as far as Russians are concerned. There's been no aggression. The Russians have been attacked 1,000 times over and surrounded by enemies. They finally had enough and do something about it. But these sanctions, this kind of rhetoric has been around for 20 years. So it has nothing to do with any invasion. There's nothing new here. It is ideology. It is offering an alternative to the liberal capitalist order. That's what's the foundation of the attacks on Russia. And the same thing went for Yugoslavia. Because to some extent, Milosevic was a national socialist of a type. And that's how he was depicted at the time. So mostly a bureaucrat. But so any move to that approach to the world, it's going to lead to violence in one form or another. It could be a color revolution. It could be bombing. It could be make-believe stories. You know, talk about Johnson's Law. You know, Serbia, no one – yeah, that's uncharted territory. So that's what's happening. That's what he's referring to. And it's the typical cowardly Western way of waging war.
You know, I think America will do whatever it can to prevent Europe from having friendly relations with Russia, because it would mean Europe could then trade with Russia, and on the other side of Russia you've got Asia, and it would freeze America out, basically. Well, Americans apparently are exempt from all of this. Amidst the waves of sanctions on Moscow, Washington made an exemption for Russian fertilizers. According to a document published by the US Treasury in March, transactions with fertilizers are authorized. In 2021, the US, the world's third biggest importer of fertilizer, made a purchase worth $1.28 billion from Russia. This step, however, is not enough to spare Americans from soaring prices. Researchers from the University of Illinois and Ohio State University looked at the effect the Ukraine conflict and the following restrictions caused to fertilizer exports. They noted that the US has robust domestic production, so it would suffer less from fertilizer supply disruption. However, US farmers are likely to face higher prices because of the global interconnectedness of the global fertilizer industry, the research says. That's nice of America to allow themselves to buy fertilizer, but what about the rest of the world? What about Europe? Europe being leaned on to not buy fertilizer? Well, according to the guy from Serbia, yes, they are being leaned on. What do you make of Americans being exempt here, Matt?
Well, it was in 2020 I wrote a fairly lengthy paper on the nature of sanctions and what exactly that refers to and just how fluid it is. It really is, you know, so there's these sanctions on Russia, but you have all these huge billion-dollar purchases and oil purchases right up until last year. Sanctions packages have to have a specific target, an institution or a person that has to be laid out and an explanation given as to why these people are included. And even there, any sanctions that can play Iran or Iraq, the president can simply decree that this industry is exempt, this person is exempt. It's really almost a press release more than an actual reality. Prices in the U.S. are not based on any market. At the level of the conglomerate, the BlackRock monopoly, they decide how much we pay for things. Gas production, as gas prices have nothing to do with global supply. There was a glut just a year ago. These are set by these huge conglomerates that don't respond to markets. They create markets. And the fact that people are still using the market ideology to justify this is laughable. Now, I guess the simple explanation as to these endless and irrational attacks on Russia and their allies is American capitalism is in severe decline. The U.S. has been in a depression at least since 08. That's why it's forbidden for journalists to use the word depression, referring to economics. And they're looking at very successful competitors, competitors to the point where they're totally rebuilding the infrastructure of the world in their image, like with the Belt and Road, the Nord Stream pipelines, and these kind of things taken together. This is maybe the final nail in the coffin of American capitalism. And as I've said for a while, when you back a wounded animal into a corner, they're going to lash out. And this represents the lashing out. That's why it's so irrational. That's why there's no coherent explanation. But you have a dying society faced with a robust, very powerful society doing much better than it, taking old markets and everything. And of course, they're going to lash out like this. So that's a simple explanation. It's a simple matter of economic inferiority. You know, the U.S. is not the largest economy in the world. The U.S. cannot throw its weight around anymore. Sanctions are loaded with holes. I mean, even Cuba, sanctions for so long, and there was a robust trade in almost everything with the Cubans. These are so fluid and specific because of the nature of private property. You can't tell people where they're going to make their money, certainly not elites. So this has more to do with gouging and the manipulation of prices than anything that's going on in terms of foreign policy.
Well, another country that uses rather a lot of Russian fertilizer is Brazil, which is heavily dependent on fertilizers for its agriculture and imports around 85% of the substances it uses, with Russia being among the top suppliers. In February, Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro visited Moscow and agreed on fertilizer shipments, which are still arriving in the country despite the sanctions-related difficulties. "We are not going to take sides," Bolsonaro said, referring to Russia's military operation in Ukraine. "For us, the fertilizer issue is sacred." In March, then-Agriculture Minister of Brazil, Teresa Cristina Diaz, said her country had secured the support of Argentina, Bolivia, Chile, Paraguay, and Uruguay for a proposal to the UN Food and Agriculture Organization to exclude fertilizers from sanctions on Russia. The rising prices and fears of shortages make farmers' lives more difficult across Latin America. And it's not only about food. In Ecuador, where flowers are one of the major export sectors, the National Association of Florists expressed concern over the lack of fertilizer. The president of Argentina, Alberto Fernandez, voiced concern over the effects of sanctions on the international level when he met with German Chancellor Olaf Scholz in Berlin in May. The economic sanctions applied to Russia have negative repercussions for Argentina and the world. And that is why I insist that we have to find a quick way to find a solution to the armed conflict, Fernandez said. So we're having all sorts of sensible things being talked here. We need to stop this conflict. We cannot have sanctions which are harming the people of Brazil, harming the people of Latin America. Where are the European politicians saying, well, we cannot have these sanctions. Look at the price of the fuel that's going up. What about the price of the fertilizer in Europe? We don't have any European politicians apart from the Serbian one. And in Hungary, where they're speaking up for the Hungarian people and refusing to put sanctions on the oil, at least these leaders of Latin America appear to be putting their people first. We don't see that in Europe, do we, Matt?
No, but I think there is one silver lining here. And I've kind of resisted this in the past, but I'm changing my mind here, is that governments in Latin America and certain other places around the world are going to really start turning their backs on globalization. This is stuff that we predicted years ago, maybe even decades ago. This is what globalization is going to produce, an extremely dependent population, especially in the developing world, that has to play ball with the global order, or else they're not going to get stuff like fertilizer and food products that they could easily make themselves. Flowers. But we can't grow flowers in America. We need Ecuador. These are ridiculous, irrational policies. And it probably would cost much less to use this American flowers. We don't need Ecuador for flowers, for God's sake. But people like Bolsonaro are facing a severe problem because Latin America is so dependent on the U.S. All their currencies are pegged to the dollar. And the U.S. – now, that's one place where sanctions are going to hit hard. That's what happened in Venezuela. This wouldn't be the case in Europe or Russia. But they're realizing this. The dependency is something that's becoming intolerable, not just dependency on the U.S. politically, but even basic things like fertilizer, which in decades past they produced from the dawn of history. But this is going to turn – not only are they going to be interested in rejecting the U.S. control, but global sourcing. And this group of countries here, Argentina, Bolivia, Chile, Paraguay, Uruguay, what they should be doing is not worrying about what the UN does since they have no power, but start, you know, pooling their resources and doing what, you know, Chavez said just, you know, 10 years ago, producing their own institutions, banks and otherwise. That's really the concern here. Now, Brazil trades a lot with Russia because they're, you know, they're part of the BRICS apparatus. But the BRICS apparatus, Brazil's interest in that has to do with the fact they're sick and tired of being dependent on this kind of arrogant, irrational, armed militant liberalism coming from the U.S., where sanctions can destroy these economies. Being a part of BRICS means that they can branch out, they can be a part of a much larger market, and then they don't have to follow the dictates of Washington. So stuff like this is just going to accelerate that process.
Well, it does seem as if the United Nations is actually on their side. The idea that sanctions should not affect fertilizers was already voiced by the UN. The Secretary General Antonio Guterres insisted that Russian food and fertilizers must have unrestricted access to world markets without indirect impediments. He also addressed the rising price of wheat as exports from Ukraine, one of the major producers, are now disrupted by the conflict. There is no effective solution to the food crisis without reintegrating Ukraine's food production, as well as the food and fertilizer produced by Russia and Belarus, into world markets, despite the war, he claimed. And of course, there's been no reporting on that in the Western press, that the UN is saying there should be no sanctions on food and fertilizer. And he's saying it's indirect impediments. I guess that's implying what it is that's preventing this, because according to the, you know, as you were saying, Matt, according to these sanctions, they're not supposed to affect food and fertilizer. So that's going to be their excuse, isn't it? They're going to say that, you know, America is going to say, well, we haven't banned fertilizer, but indirectly they have, haven't they?
Yeah, because it's connected to the fuel industry. I mean, there is a petroleum component to a lot of these fertilizers. So there's always indirect ways to attack it. Or they could also just mention the individual or the CEO or important people in that sector, and that would be an indirect way to ban it. See, when the sanctions first became important, after Cuba, so Iraq and Iran early on, it was always, you know, screamed from the halls of Congress, this cannot affect food. This isn't about starving people. This is about harming the government. I remember them saying that over and over again. That's why the U.S. is still working with the Iranians in the food department. I have a whole long list of all the American corporations operating in Iran despite these sanctions. But they're all almost all in the food and medical industry. This includes medicine as well. But where Russia is concerned, where real nationalist threats to European liberalism are concerned, they don't care. They'll make private arrangements, indirect arrangements, whatever they have to do. They're willing to starve people. Now, we know the regime has, this is music to their ears here. It's not going to affect them. But now I think they're willing to do whatever it takes. This is a huge threat to them. You know, in the third world, maybe they were nicer about it. But this is Russia. This is a group of people that liberals from – I mean, even Karl Marx had this visceral hatred of Russia because of this, you know, their non-liberal attitudes. So that's why this stuff is happening when it didn't happen in the past. They don't care about starving huge numbers of people. And the American economy was always in a depression to begin with. And now we have this. No one can survive this except the BlackRock monopoly.
Of course, the countries that are really going to starve are in Africa. Amidst rising grain and fertilizer prices and trade disruptions, the word hunger has started to appear in media headlines. Hunger is serious, Dr. Brian Baker says. However, I think the current situation is more a problem with food distribution than with food production. Both are factors. As food stores decrease, production will become more important. Dr. Dora Drexler also believes the danger is real, but mostly for countries with less developed economies, for example, North Africa. They buy most of the grain from Ukraine or from Russia, and of course their spending power is lower than in Europe. So if there is a shortage of supplies and prices are up, they are much more vulnerable, she notes. African farmers have also felt the effects of the shortage, and it was reported that several countries reached out to Moscow for help. According to comments from the Russian Foreign Ministry to RAA Novosti, there are a number of states asking for assistance in the delivery of food and fertilizers. And of course, if there is starvation in Africa, that is going to lead to more migrants making their way into Europe. And what do you make of this reaching out to Moscow for help, Matt? Do you think Moscow will help out the North Africans?
Yeah, sure. I guarantee you they're going to be selling things below market like they're doing with India. India has banned all exports of wheat for this reason. And I don't think our people know this, but the so-called Ukrainian government has said we're not going to export a speck of wheat until the U.S. intervenes in this war. Now, Ukrainian impact on the wheat market is pretty much zero, and they don't have an independent government there. But this is going to do nothing more than put more pressure on this. Ukraine has no bargaining power here, but it just shows you the level of arrogance that the colonial administration is willing to do. Now, as you mentioned, North Africa. Most of North Africa is totally non-arable, and that would go for places like Iceland or Japan. Scandinavian countries, even Greece, where you have a rocky environment. You have very little arable land in North Africa to begin with. So there is a tremendous dependency here. That makes a certain amount of sense. They're not going to go to the U.S. because the U.S. simply would like them to starve, would like to destroy them, is going to be so ideologically motivated. Yeah, we'll give you food so long as you let the fags run your government or something like that. Russians, of course, won't do that, and they're willing – because they're building alliances with all of this, they're willing to sell below market. Russia is well taken care of financially. They have no debt. They have tons of gold. No, it's now about diplomacy and creating allies rather than making a profit. And the state would have a role in this, unlike the West, where simply private corporations wanting to exploit them.
Well, the solution is, of course, self-sufficiency, so you don't get into this problem in the first place. But as I pointed out, when Sri Lanka tried doing all organic farming, it was a big failure. Is there any way to avoid hunger? As both Dr. Baker and Dr. Drexler work in the field of organic agriculture, they see a potential solution in the use of more organic sources of nutrients. I see building local capacity and shorter supply chains as a way to feed people during this global crisis, Dr. Baker says. Dr. Drexler agrees that sustainable local food systems are of key importance. Adding measures we take to make sure that our world remains livable for human beings should not be dependent upon pandemics or on war or on any conflict. For me, a solution would be to help those countries who cannot produce enough food for their own population right now, to develop local agriculture, to use more agroecological methods, and to create production locally to ensure that they cannot face hunger because of a conflict happening several thousands of kilometers away, to be more dependent on their own resources rather than on the trade between continents, she says. The president of the Association of Iranian Plant Protection Scientific Societies, Dr. Mohammad Riza Rizapana, notes that the shortage of fertilizers was predicted long ago. It is partially explained by the trade disruptions, but according to Dr. Rizapana, the world is devastating its natural resources. Unlimited use of fertilizers is not possible anymore, he says. As an example, he talks about the looming shortage of phosphorus and insists that farmers should take organic agriculture methods seriously. Organic agriculture is not too difficult, but joining the organic trade is. Synchronizing with each other, making sufficient production for our countries, that is what would help us to overcome the sanctions and the pressure. We have to respect the environment, we have to respect our farmers, we have to show the farmers the organic way. It may be that there is a long way to go, and any type of solution, whether it involves dealing with fertilizer trade difficulties now or shifting to organic agriculture in the future, requires a high level of cooperation, which seems difficult to achieve given the current polarization in the world. However, even if we lifted all the restrictions right now, would it be too late to improve the situation? Or what they're suggesting there is more interconnectedness, really. They're saying that's the only way to do it is organic farming. But also, we're still going to need to be interconnected. And it's this interconnectedness that has caused the problems in the first place. Matt, what are your final thoughts on all of this?
I'm guaranteeing you here that the term organic is going to be completely redefined. The BlackRock website talks about sustainable farming and sustainable fuel sources as their main investment focus. And so they're going to be controlling what's considered organic. It makes me laugh. You have to teach them how to farm in the way that they've been farming for 10,000 years. That's what they're saying here. Only since the 60s has this been destroyed because of globalization. Now we'll teach them the organic way. Really, the organic way? The way that they've always farmed until recently? This whole thing is at so many multi-level absurdity that it's mind-blowing here.
Well, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.